Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Chasing Freedom Podcast with Noah and Jeff.
In this show, we're going to dive deep into flips, wholesales, holding rentals, and creatively structuring deals.
So that we can show you how you can achieve that lifestyle of freedom that you desire. All right, everybody, welcome back to the Chasing Freedom Show with Noah and Jeff. This is going to be an awesome episode. We have a guest on that is going to share some information in an area of real estate that we haven't really talked about too much on the show, so I am super excited. We have our good friend Katie Neeson on with us. She is in Bryan, Texas, and her company is Renovation Wrangler. She focuses on ground-up development, some fix and flips, and we're going to go deep talking about that kind of stuff. So, Katie, thanks so much for being on with us today.
Such an honor, guys. Like, I'm super excited to spend some time with y'all.
Yeah, I love it. Absolutely. Well, a little background. This it feels like our show sometimes is almost like the Maui Masterclass, like just rehash, but whatever. There's a lot of really cool people that we've met, like Katie, at the Maui Masterclass. So we met Katie in August in Maui, and we just had an awesome time getting to know her and her business. She has a really cool business set up. So let's start first with why you got started in real estate. What attracted you to real estate investment specifically?
Oh, yeah. So, you know, I always grew up wanting to be an entrepreneur, had like a fascination with money that I really don't know where it came from, but never really focused on real estate. Like, I never imagined that's where I would go. And then, like, I don't know, I guess everybody else, I read Rich Dad Poor Dad in 2006. I probably read it earlier than most of y'all, but I read it in 2006. And it wasn't really the real estate side, but it was the epiphany of how money works and kind of my reservations in real estate growing up in the 80s and 90s in Texas was really hard on people in real estate.
Okay.
But I realized that that difficulty probably wasn't real estate related. It was more your philosophy around money and how you treat money. And so the reality was I had the most knowledge about real estate because both my parents were in the industry and I kind of had a passion for it. And so probably within 2 months of reading that book, I went out and bought my first deal. But I didn't know if like that Robert Kiyosaki was a fraud or not. And so I wanted to make sure, you know, just because the guy wrote a book on it, I didn't want to risk my own finances on it, right? So I tried to find something that if I lost every penny, that it wouldn't impact us financially. So I found a nice little low income one room condo in my hometown. And it was a low rent area. It was $17,000 and it had a tenant in it who was paying $550.
That's incredible.
Yeah. And so I was like, you know, if I lose all of that money, it'll be okay. And then I got a family member to even, you know, loan me the money.
Nice.
Because I wanted to see if the model really worked. Like, could you make money with expenses, with debt, and the tenant paying the bill? So that was like my foray into it. And it turns out it does work. There were lots of things that I didn't enjoy about it being a condo or low rent, but it proved the model works.
And you know what? We talk about this so often. The first deal does not need to be a home run grand slam.
Yeah.
The first deal just needs to prove to you that it's doable and that you can scale that out.
Yeah,
exactly.
It's you're looking for a proof of concept, right? And like, what's funny is that's standard in almost any business, but for some reason with like real estate, like people kind of ignore that. They're like, I'm just gonna jump in and make a ton of money. It's like, no, your first one, you're just looking for a proof of concept. And I love that you read a book, you took action within 2 months, but really your taking action was to test to see if the book was actually true or a bunch of hogwash. I think that's really cool. I love that.
It turns out I'm skeptical.
Yeah.
But that's, I feel like that's what keeps you alive in this business.
Yeah.
You can't believe everything we see or read. Right?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially nowadays, there's a guru for everything out there. Yeah. So you gotta be careful. So after that, okay, so you bought your first rental. Those are really good numbers. You bought it for 17 grand, making 550 in rent. That's awesome. We can maybe buy like, I don't even think you can buy a car in our market for 17 grand, but that's cool. You know, it's awesome. So what did you do after that? You realized it worked. And then what was the next steps for you?
Yeah. So we were transitioning back to our hometown. And so the next deal was we had to find a house for my family. And so at the time I just had one toddler and then my husband, and he's a working cowboy. So we have lots of requirements. We have to have an arena. We have to have barns and a place to grow hay. And so all these requirements, but like we're young kids, young married kids, we don't have a lot of money.
Yeah.
And so we started looking at properties and there just aren't very many that fit that philosophy, right? Well, we came across one that was so nice. It had a nice house. It already had the hay barn, the horse barn, the arena, everything we needed, but it was really expensive. And so in the horse barn, it had this shop where they had put a full bath in the shop and they use it just like as their workshop.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know what? If we could put a kitchenette in here And then on one end, just build a wall. This could be the closet and we could rent this out.
Yeah.
And so could we afford it that way? So I started running the numbers, and not only could we afford it that way, like we couldn't afford the other ones anymore. Cause once you get $600 in rent to go towards your mortgage, it's hard to make that up.
Yeah.
So our second one was a house hack. At the time, I don't think that term had been coined yet.
You were the OG house hacker?
She was. This is the original.
So I think people had done it for a long time. They just didn't know the name.
Yeah.
And so then from there, I wanted to try and figure out, like, I still had a full-time job. And I want to say, how can we make like real estate investing a plan, a path? And I know enough about me and my emotions, like, I need a partner. Because today I'm like, oh, rah, rah. And tomorrow I'm like, oh, this is never going to work.
I love
That's
it.
That's Jeff.
That's so me, bro. Noah's like, why are you so moody this morning? I'm like, shut up, Noah. Everything's horrible.
No, because the day's not going like planned.
One thing's gone wrong. The microwave didn't heat up his food right. And he's like, oh, I'm mad today.
Dude, I'm right there with you. Somebody called before I was ready for the first phone call. So I knew I needed a partner, but, you know, I didn't know like who to ask. So my mom had been in real estate forever and I knew that she'd keep me out of trouble. So I took a whole business plan to her and said, let's do this. And she graciously allowed. So we both like contributed money to it. Like we tried to make it as fair of a partnership as possible. Not like me mooching off my mama.
Yeah.
and we started buying fourplexes, and it was during 2010. So there were lots of empty fourplexes and houses on the market. The crash was really getting going good. Mm-hmm. And so we bought some vacant ones out of bankruptcy on a street that had been transitioning. It was all low income rental, but then it was transitioning to college students because we're in a college town.
Nice.
So we were like, well, that's good for appreciation. But for our own fear, we were still thinking we liked the idea of HUD, government paying the rent, like that felt good. So we fixed them up. They needed a lot of renovation and we did them, you know, like two chicks would. Nice paint color on the walls, nice flooring, you know, did them up really good and got them rented. And oh my God, hated it.
Really?
So I just hate mundane routine stuff. Mm. It was so exciting to do it. And then once they moved in, I was like, did they pay this month? I don't know. Who's keeping up with that? Mm. And like, it just, who's renewing leases? And then they call you for the dumbest things and you know,
Do
it right. You got to do it yourself. So here we are property managing. Like we just hated it.
Yeah.
But we love the fixing up part. Mm. So we said, let's just pivot. Let's go into flipping houses. Still a full-time job. So there was lots of flexibility to just make easy moves. Mm. Bought our first flip, loved it, sold all the fourplexes off to an investor, and then just started flipping for, I guess, the last 10 years. That's what we've been doing.
Nice. That's awesome. So the original model is you're going to buy fourplexes and you're going to be landlords. And you decided that is horrible. I can relate to that because I love the process of a flip. And then I don't love anything afterwards. Like once the house is done, I'm like, cool. Like even from the day that we listed on, even on the flip, I'm like, from the day it's listed on, I don't really care about it anymore. The process was the fun part.
That's why we need partners. Yeah. We're all emotional high. Yeah. We're, you know, scoring baskets, but we don't want to go and do all the boring stuff after it. Like, read the stats.
Yeah. Which it's funny now because like now we're doing the Airbnb. So it's almost like I'm getting to extend the fun part because now it's not just the process of the remodel, but then it's the process of like actually getting it fully furnished and making it look cool. And that is like really rewarding because one of the things that I hate about flipping houses, and I told Noah this like probably like a couple months ago, is every time I flip a house, I could sell it for $100,000 or I could sell it for $800,000. I guarantee you when I go by midsummer, the lawn that I spent $3,000 to put in is dead. And I am so mad about it every time. Like, why did you buy this house to kill the lawn? And so now it's cool. Like, my lawn's not going to die that I put effort into. It's going to be nice because I'm going to continue to hold it and make money. All right, that's a good point. Yeah, I'm like, people are done killing my lawn, so I'm just going to keep the house. But okay, so then you start flipping. What does that look like? Because you've been doing it 10 years. So did you start slow and then scale up? Did you build a team? Kind of walk us through those early years and what it looks like today.
Yeah, so we did flips with all cash. We sold the fourplexes. So that gave us the flexibility to have some liquidity.
Nice.
So that took out that risk. Mm. And then the other risk is, what if we can't sell it when we're done? Then what? What's the backup plan?
Yeah.
So we always make sure plan B is that it can rent for break even. Mm. So that really limits how big your flip can be.
Yes, it does.
So your flip ends up being, I mean, at the time it was like below 150 for our market. Now it's below 200 for our market. And so they're kind of starter, second home kind of thing. And so it limited it. Those are also the tighter margin ones. So in order for that to make sense, it's about volume. And so we, after we got a couple under our belt, we realized like, if we're going to do this and make a living at it, we got to go and do lots of volume.
Yeah.
And so I was actually at the time working for a company, a startup company as a real estate development officer, which they had never had one and I knew nothing about it. And so I got to learn at least the process of it. And then that company, it was a startup company and it sold and it gave me an exit of about 1 year's worth of income.
Oh, nice.
So
that's a great runway.
Yeah. My next step is I'm just going to bet on myself. So I just set it up in a checking account and I paid, you know, myself every 2 weeks out of that, just like I would. And said at the end of the year, if it doesn't work, like I had a job when I left the last one. So I can go and find another job. And so that's what we did. And then we started trying to do, I think our goal at the time was to do 12 to 15 a year. Like that was kind of the number where we could both make a living and be doing what we want to do. And so that was how we did that. And so, but the hard part is when you get desperate for a house to keep following your rules. And so, you know, we've been fortunate. We've never lost money on a house, but we came really close once. Mm. And yeah, I think we ended up making maybe $2,000 on that house and we had lots of money into it.
Yeah.
And it was a big house that even though it had a lot of bedrooms, we probably would have struggled to get it rented and break even. So it was just a reminder with it being so close on the margin. Like if you've got rules and you got the process, you have to trust it and follow the process.
Yeah, absolutely.
One of the things that you had just kind of went through is like a repeating thing in your story was, I feel like really successful people, they listen to themselves, or sorry, they talk to themselves. They don't listen to themselves. And I noticed in a lot of the decisions that you've made across that journey that you just broke down for us, you had to take like a leap of faith at each step.
Yeah.
And you could have used emotion and you could have said, well, what if, well, what if, well, what if, and just looked at the downside and you were aware of it. You weren't pretending that that didn't exist. The risk is always there. But instead, you listened to yourself and you said, hey, look, I've got an exit strategy. I'm willing to take this risk. I will bet on myself. I know that the risk is there, but I'm more concerned about progressing forward and learning and making this, you know, idea of wanting to become a house flipper a reality. Whereas I think so many people, they sit there and they, instead of talking to themselves and telling themselves to go for it, they listen to themselves and they listen to that negative reaction or that negative fear. Yeah. And that stops them from ever getting started.
Yep. Yeah. So, you know, I kind of want to talk to that because that is a struggle for me. And what I do whenever, because as I've grown my business, like the fear level, it amplifies, right? Because the more you have on the line, the more you have to lose. Mm-hmm. And so it's been there all along and it never goes away and it actually gets bigger. And so I have a very rational brain. Like, and so for every deal, I sit down and I say, best case scenario, worst case scenario. Can I live with that? And so for the first one was if I lost everything on the condo. Well, for the flip, when I quit my job for a year, it was like, am I willing to give up 1 year of income? Because basically that's what would have happened.
Yeah.
And then have to go get another job. And so very rationally, I can sit down and do pros and cons and then take the next step. But there are times, because I am also a very emotional person, which is why I need a business partner, that I can get myself so worked up into a frenzy. And so I have a person who is just like such a practical mentor, steady Eddie, that when I get all worked up in a frenzy, I just call him and he kind of is my guy who talks me off the ledge and says, okay, so yeah, that's the worst case scenario. Can you live with it? And so when we kind of went into these ground up developments that we're going to talk about, like that was a huge ledge because you have 3 years before you're going to see a return on that money. Mm-hmm. You're putting other people's money in it. You're putting your money in it and you have to keep the portfolio going. So in 3 years, you may have four of those non-income earning construction projects on the ground. And so this probably will freak people out, but I'm having this call with this guy and I'm like, you know, we need to hire somebody to do construction. There's a salary so that we can get enough deals to keep the development going. And he was like, so what's the worst case scenario? And, you know, I'm all emotional and freaking out. I'm like, dude, we could go into bankruptcy. And he's like, okay.
Yeah.
So if you did that, then what would you do? And I'm like, well, I got all this information and all this knowledge, and yep. I bet I could get back to where I am a lot faster the second time. And so I think it was him letting me say out loud, like, yeah, if we lose everything, we could go into bankruptcy. But bankruptcy is just a vehicle in a situation where you're at that you can build back out of.
Yeah.
And so why I don't want to do it, and I know it would be an emotional wreck, and I know it'd be harder to get money. Like, I have contacts, I have systems, I have knowledge. Like, that's the worst case scenario. I know that it is. And if that happens, that's my path, then we'll work our way out of it.
Yeah. I love that. That I've never heard anybody say that. Like, I've had that internal conversation with myself. Like, I grew up really poor, and I'm like, worst case scenario, go back and you build back. Like, now I'm 10 years ahead of where I was. I got all this knowledge. I've done it before. I got my contacts. Like, at that point, it's like, shoot, if going back to square one for people might not be the worst thing. You know, there's a little humility that comes with it, and then maybe build back better the second time. So I think that's really cool, and I appreciate you sharing that with us and being vulnerable. One thing you said about the flips that I don't want to miss, if you're listening to this show and you're a flipper, Katie said something that I think is really smart. If you plan on being a volume flipper, you have to create that buy box and stay within it, because I've been in this scenario where I like three, you know, probably 4 or 5 years ago, I was buying deals to buy deals so that I had deals and was keeping my machine fed. That machine was not creating revenue on some of those deals because I was solely buying to keep it, to keep the wheels kind of churning. You don't want to get into that game. Like, you want to have that buy box. And if you plan on being a volume flipper, you're going to have to tell yourself that there may be a day when you say no to a deal or a couple of deals and you're not hitting your volume numbers, because volume numbers don't matter. The revenue that it creates matters. So if you're planning on doing volume flipping, just be prepared for that. Make your buy box and stay within it, because a lot of people get burned in this industry just by trying to continue the deal flow that they have, and then they start taking on bad deals. So I just wanted to highlight that real quick. Yeah. I think that was really, really impactful.
That's great. We've come into times where we didn't have the volume that we wanted.
Yeah.
And we were at the point where we could either give on margin, because, you know, we have so mm-hmm. much that we want to make, mm-hmm. or we could give on the model and go do bigger homes. And we gave on the margin because the reality is, it is better to be doing something than nothing.
Absolutely.
Because that energy and that momentum creates more momentum.
Yep.
But had we gone and said, well, let's just do this bigger house where we can make a bigger margin, that momentum might create more of those opportunities.
Yeah.
We would have rather made less money on what fit in our box because that should create more opportunities. And those were the type of opportunities we were looking for. So it's a good point. Like, we have encountered that a couple of times in our journey.
Yeah. And what's cool is, again, in that scenario, you talked to yourself and you gave yourself two options. Okay, we could do this, and this is the byproduct of that decision. We could do this, and this is the byproduct of that decision. So you thought it through and made a logical decision for your business. That's awesome. So now today, you're still doing some flips, but you don't, that's not your primary focus, right?
No. So, you know, we got into real estate originally for cash flow.
Yep.
And probably everyone knows, or if you don't, you should know. It's a job when you flip houses.
Yes.
It's not about cash flow.
Yep.
But we started flipping houses and we loved it. And it kind of became our identity. It's definitely our passion. We had our niche. We were doing it in downtown. People were calling, asking ahead of time if we had houses coming up. Realtors were reaching out to my mom, and business partner's been a realtor forever. Like, so we kind of got caught up in the ego side of it.
Yeah.
Even though we knew that we're flipping houses, and flipping's a cycle, right? At some point it doesn't work.
Yeah.
And you have to wait for the cycle to come back through. Mm-hmm. And we knew that. But we were still kind of living like the ego side of the deal. But we were like, in 2016, we said, you know, every year, let's get one cash flowing asset. Because what we learned was, it's hard to build wealth and cash flow at the same time.
Yeah.
You can build, you know, like, we can make a whole lot of income from flipping houses, but we're not building any wealth.
Yep.
Or we can go and buy a whole lot of apartment complexes, but the cash flow adds up really slow compared to the amount of money you're putting in. Mm-hmm. So we were kind of stuck in limbo. Like, how do we make the transition, and really didn't know what to do? So we're like, well, let's at least start buying one cash flowing asset a year. And we want it to be something that's low maintenance, that can have a property manager, and that we're proud of.
Yeah.
We want to be able to drive people through town and say, that's right, I own that.
That's awesome.
All those people who are able to stay unemotional in real estate, kudos to you. We can't. Like, if we're not loving it, we're not going to want to do it.
Yeah.
And so we bought our first office building. We fixed it up. We got tenants in it. It was super easy. And then you know, did that for a couple of years, and then COVID hit, and like all of a sudden we realized like Flippy could end overnight. Like we didn't know if everybody was going to stop buying houses.
Yeah.
So there was lots of angst and anxiety. We're in the middle of our first big ground up construction on a mixed use project. And we thought, you know, it'd be brilliant. We should GC it ourselves.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. Brilliant. It gave us what we wanted, which was control of all the information.
Yeah.
We had control of it from every day, but it was like leaving my house, going over to the job site, laying down and just let people kick the crud out of me all day long. Like that's what it felt like. And then all this is going on with COVID and I'm like, are we even going to be able to keep doing flips? And I just realized we've got to ramp up the cash flow side.
Yeah.
And so that's when I just started going, I'm using this thing that I don't know what to do next as an excuse not to do anything.
Yeah.
And so I said, you know what? I'm just going to start doing stuff. Like it's easier to guide when you're in motion than when you're sitting still. So, you know, they were talking about on Bigger Pockets, vivid vision, making a vision. So I created that. We kind of got crystallized on what we wanted to do. We went 2 days, like this is my mom in my hometown. We're like, we'll go 2 days off site and we'll have like a planning meeting.
Yeah.
And it was, we'd never done that the whole time we've been in business together. And
yeah.
We set up KPIs and where we wanted to go. And like, we have this really good direction, read who, not how, and realized we have to hire someone, because what happened was while we're GCing a commercial building, there's nobody filling the pipeline.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it took us a year to build that building. So that was basically when we came out of that and we looked up, we're like, there is zero money coming in. There is no house. There's no pipeline.
Yeah.
And so we're like, that's it. We're going to hire someone. So in the last 12 to 18 months, we've pivoted and we've done a lot. Like we've hired someone, we've got really clear on what direction we're going. And then we decided we're not going to wonder anymore how we're going to pay for it before we buy it. We're just going to go start buying them and trust that we'll figure out how to pay for it when it's time to have the money.
Yeah.
Sorry. Go ahead. You finish.
No, I was just going to say, so now we've got this full pipeline. We've got construction going. Like it's just rolling like it's supposed to.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and I think too, that it goes back to you betting on yourself. It's the whole model of ready, fire, aim. Or what was it? Is that
yep.
ready, aim? No, ready, fire, aim. Yeah, that's correct. Ready, fire, aim. I think that there's a lot of power in that, because a lot of times we get stuck trying to ride out this whole plan.
Mm-hmm.
And then if things don't go according to your plan, you get frustrated. And then you start blaming things and then you go backwards, right? But instead, if you're just like, no, I'm moving forward, I'm going for it, I'm going to try.
Yeah.
That's a totally different like trajectory on how to become successful. And I feel like that's what we did with our rentals in South Bend. Like,
yep.
Were we fully ready? Did we understand every aspect of the market? Did we fully dive in and know every single vacancy number? No, we didn't.
Yeah.
But we bought 4 houses,
yeah.
Realized that we didn't want to own houses so far spread out, sold those houses, yeah. Then bought multifamily that was more tight-knit and all within like a couple mile radius of each other. And now that portfolio stabilized and cash flowing really well.
Yep.
Yes.
One of the things you said is you just started buying, trusting the funding would come. And I actually think that, like, I don't think there's any other way to do it. Like, I remember I would get a deal and a deal would come across my desk and I would look at it and be like, okay, well, these are the lenders I have available, blah, blah, blah. And by the time I would map out in my head if I was going to take it down, somebody else had taken it down and I lost a freaking deal. Yep. And you know what I would have done? I would have been able to raise the money just fine. So we started doing the same thing. If it's a deal, we get it under contract, the money will come. Like, people are... There's, especially right now, there's a ton of money in circulation right now.
Yes.
People love to lend to investors who have a proven track record and have a pipeline.
Mm-hmm.
It shows not just have you been successful in the past, but you have a system and a process to continue to be successful. So I'm going to bet on you. So I think that's brilliant. Like if you were to tell me, hey, I got one project, I need funding for this. And then, okay, what's next? You're like, I don't know. We kind of figured that out at the end. I'd be like, I'm not attracted to that. I want you to be like, I got 6 in the pipeline and we're going to fund all of them. And we're going to continue to grow that pipeline. So I think that's really key for people. And it goes on betting on yourself. Get the deal. If it's a deal, get the deal. Figure out the funding as you go along. I think that's awesome.
Yeah. I want to speak to like our big hurdle was there were not people doing what we were doing in our market that we were connecting with.
Yeah.
So, you know, like I'm trying to find the person who makes the next step feel easy. And I was just struggling on how to do that. You know, I can go onto a forum and type all day long, mm-hmm. but that is not going to get a connection. And then you throw a question out there and you get all the stupid answers. Well, I'm not going to dig through stupid answers looking for a good one. You know,
yeah,
I was just really struggling making that connection. And so when the Maui Mastermind thing popped up,
yeah,
I was like, I just have to find a way to make it work. I'm going to sign up for it. Then I'll figure out how to pay for it. And, you know, we miss my daughter moving off to college. I didn't get to move her into college because we were at the Mastermind. So there was definitely a sacrifice to do it.
Yeah.
But speaking to all those people who are not like y'all, like y'all have been amazing the way y'all make connections and like you're just super ballers. Like you're totally gifted with that.
Thank you.
And I'm all like, if you come talk to me, I'll talk to you, or I'm going to be like the class clown and we're not going to make the connection. You know, like, those are my two extremes. And so going out there has, like, if anybody is wondering, like, how important is that or what it's worth, I can tell you, like, get a coach and go around successful, high achieving people who are in the area of interest that you're in. Like, it will change your life.
Yeah.
And it has not even been that long and it has already changed our life.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. Yeah. We get asked all the time, was going to the Mastermind worth it? And we're pretty vocal about, like, we went to the Mastermind. We have like three coaches. We go to a ton of different events and like we spend a lot of money doing it. We don't hide. We're not shy of that. We are proud of how much money we spend to educate ourselves and to surround ourselves by people who are better than us. And we get asked all the time, is it worth it? And the answer is an astounding yes. It's the best decision we've ever made to go to these events and surround ourselves with these people. You got to go and get out of your comfort zone and get out of your circle and surround yourself by people who are where you want to be, because they're going to drag you along with them. If anything, you're just going to learn from them. Like, worst case scenario, even if you don't partner, even if you don't do a deal, you're gonna learn from that person. You're gonna have a contact with that person, be able to reach out and pick their brain on things that they're doing. So absolutely, that's huge.
I might put like one caveat on that, because it's funny. You said you talked to people about going to the Maui Mastermind. So I've started talking to people about it also.
Yeah.
And there are people who struggle. Like, they're almost like in disbelief. Yeah, but was it worth it?
Yes.
You know, oh, did you have to pay for that? So here's kind of my, like, I've learned when to stop talking about it. And my deal is, if they say, like, well, what was the content? Like, what did you learn? I'm like, you know what? That's a good point. You're not ready to go. Like,
you don't understand.
You need to keep spending time learning about like the process. Cause if you're like, well, what were the sessions? And even my husband was like, but you already know that kind of stuff. You're already doing that. I was like, well, obviously there's always more to learn, but his mindset was, why are you paying to go learn stuff that you already know? I'm like, I'm not. Like, if we never had one structured class, like, that's not where the value comes from.
Yep.
So if you're still caught up on, if I'm not getting value out of the content like you do from a conference or something, then you're probably actually not ready to go, and you might not get the value you need out of it because you're looking in the wrong place for the value.
Yeah,
I agree completely. I think one of the other things that was interesting about going is, I think if you go with the intent of what can I take from other people, you've also missed the train.
Yeah.
You're not on the right path. Instead, like, we were very intentful about going and being like, what can we add to other people?
Yeah.
And by doing that, we've opened the door to a lot of potential partnerships, like even deals between you and I. Like, I still think that we're going to do an awesome, some type of short-term Airbnb hold in downtown Bryan. Like, I think that that would be really fun.
I just want to own in Texas. Sounds cool.
Who doesn't, right? Y'all come down, with some Frito Pa? I would not be surprised, Noah, if you don't have a partnership with like every person from the Maui Mastermind. Like, you are, to be an introvert, you're a pretty amazing connector. That's for sure.
Yep. Yeah. We got like six partnerships brewing. I really want the Texas one, cause I got a really cool Stetson cowboy hat, and then I would wear it every time I go down to Texas.
And when you come down here, if my husband doesn't like the way it's shaped, he'll shape it up for you.
Hey, I need some help. I had to put that thing in the wrong area of the closet, and it needs some love. Let me tell you what.
Bring it down.
That's awesome. So what would you say? Let's go back to development real quick. What would you say are the biggest hurdles of getting into development, and what has been the things that you have learned and kind of tweaked to be more successful in that arena?
Okay. So first off, we found our passion and our mission. So our passion is to kind of fan the flames of this hometown revival that people have already started before us. And our gift or ability is to create housing options. And so lots of small towns are revitalizing all over the country.
Yeah.
But most of them, even ours, I feel like misses the point that without heads and beds, those businesses will always struggle.
Yeah.
So if you just look like at the traditional development pattern of any real estate project, they put in five or six subdivisions. And then all of a sudden the big box retailers come in, the big chain restaurants come in, because commercial follows rooftops.
Yeah.
But when you're revitalizing a downtown, what you have are commercial buildings and you don't have many rooftops because they've all left.
Yeah.
And so the city is super focused on, let's get shops into those. Let's get events coming downtown so that people can support those businesses. But you guys know, running a business, you cannot manage a business on two or three events a month.
Like, oh, yeah.
Every day,
yep,
you need sustainable, predictable income.
Yep.
And what gives you that is when the person rolls out of bed in the morning, yes, and says, I'm going to go eat at this restaurant or I'm going to go shop here, because it makes the most sense. It's not a destination venue.
Yeah.
It's because that's what makes sense. And that's why all those restaurants are near all those subdivisions, because it's the closest option for them.
Yep.
So what we did is that was our passion and we knew it. And so then we went and met with the city and said, like, this is our passion. Turns out that is also their passion. Mm. And so what worked for us and what's important in development is that your goals align with the city's goals.
Yeah.
Because I did real estate development on the other side of my job and encountered times when the city did not want what we wanted to build, even though it made sense. And I still strongly believe they're idiots and they should have wanted it. It's a boulder that you're pushing uphill the time.
Yep.
And so for us, the mission aligned with what the city wanted. So then we go to our first development meeting with the city. We had bought three little lots and they had three little modular homes on them and an area downtown where seriously no new homes for sale have been built in our downtown in my lifetime. We would be the first.
Wow.
So that's kind of high risk, right?
Yeah.
We were pretty, we felt like we were confident, but it was still high risk. We talked to all the developers in town. They're like, y'all are idiots. So anyway, we bought the property. We didn't know lot size. We didn't know if we could build townhomes. Like, we didn't know. It was all out of ignorance, which I don't recommend either, but sometimes you just got to be moving.
It happens sometimes.
But we knew that worst case scenario, we had those three HUD houses. It cash flow. We just sell them to some other investor and we had a backstop.
Yeah.
And so we go and meet with the city and we're like, we want to build these townhomes. And we took pictures. We laid out the vision of what we wanted. And they were like, oh my God, we love that. To the extent that we were like, we must be fools. Like, they're too excited. But what we learned in that is they said, hey, what if we give you some extra land next to your property so that you could build seven townhomes instead of five?
Wow.
And so you're like, so where'd the extra land come from? So in a lot of old downtowns, they have right-of-ways that are like 80 foot wide because that's how they stopped the spread of fire back before you had all the fire protection. To keep it from jumping streets, they would have really wide right-of-ways.
Okay.
Well, now you don't need those anymore because we have all the fire sprinkler systems and that's all that crap I hate, but we have all that, all that expensive stuff.
Yeah, for real.
So they said, we can give you 15 foot on one side and we'll give you 10 foot in the front and we'll, you know, give you all these exceptions. Like, you don't have to have the big setbacks and all of these, like, they were so accommodating that we left there thinking they must know something we don't. But super glad they did, because it turns out five houses would not have made us money. All of our profit were in those extra two that ended up being the seven. And so that's when we learned, like, have a relationship with your city, tell them what you're doing, and go with the vision. Go with, like, pictures that show what you're trying to create, and then do it. Because the city gets so frustrated when these investors come in and they have like these super cool places and they have all these little black picket fences and they have all these dimensions and accents. And then when you build it, it looks like a KB home because you're like, oh, we couldn't afford wrought iron. So we just, you know, we killed that. And those dimensions were expensive. So it's just flat across the front, you know, and then it just looks like nothing like you envision. So while the city is a pain in the rear and they always will be, and they collect a government check, regardless if your project gets done, and those personalities definitely butt heads, if you're doing what they want, they really can help you be successful in it.
I think that is so huge. We have run into that a couple of times where it's like, right now we have this project in downtown Meridian. It's a little area we're at, and the zoning is old town zoning is what they call it.
Yes.
And we've been extremely frustrated because old town zoning, there's no setbacks. There's no density. Like, it's like you could do whatever you want, but then you talk to somebody and they're like, well, I don't know if you could do that because of this and this. And you're like, holy crap. So then we just said, just tell me what you want. Like, that is all I need to know. Just tell me what you want. And it turns out they would actually prefer us to put a really cool looking office there. And we need to stop wasting money on office rent. So we're going to build our own office, cut down our expense, and the city is going to be extremely lenient with us doing that. So I think that's huge. If you're looking at getting in development within a development area, to find out what they want, because then they're going to help you. And you never know, like, in some areas in our town, they have tax credits that they'll give you. There's grant, there's opportunity zones where it could be tax-free over the course of 5 to 10 years. There's some really powerful stuff that you can do with development if you get on the side of the city. Because if not, they're going to crush you.
And just note, every city has a master plan. You should be able to find it online or ask them for it. Like, it's all been laid out. So you get a feel for where they see growth anyway. But on y'all's office building, are y'all able to build like lofts above it and put people in up there? Or were they
We were considering it, and then we were looking at it, and it just makes more sense to just go, we can get 3 stories there. So it just makes more sense to go 3 stories and then just lease out offices, because we have a shortage of office space in that area, and we'll make more money renting out. Like, we can almost rent out a 10 by 11 office for what a 2-bedroom, 1-bath apartment would rent out for. Like, somebody would pay me $1,000 to have that 11 by 11 office in a cool building. So we're like, we're just going to go, we're going to go that route and sublet a couple of the offices out above us.
Yeah, that's how it is here too. So our office market though isn't as strong. So we have to balance revenue. Like, it's easy to get lofts leased.
Yeah.
It can be challenging to find the right fit on the office space. So it's good though that y'all analyze it that way. But we found the same thing. It's more expensive to build that apartment, and you're probably going to get less dollar per square foot than you will for the office space.
Yep. And just like you have like backup contingency plans for everything you do. Like, we're very lucky that we're pretty well connected in the Treasure Valley, which is like the whole Boise area. And so we've got like 4 or 5 people that would like love to be a part of that process.
Yeah.
Would love to have a space in that. I feel like we'll have actually people competing and bidding
to get 5 or 10 offices.
To be a part of that, that's office build, rather than us like having to stress out and be like, oh man, I hope that we can fill this with a bunch of random people. Like, we're actually going to be very selective on who we allow to be a part of that. Because we want it to be this environment where everybody collaborates together and builds each other's businesses up.
Creates like a great energy. I love that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I would love to dig in a little bit more. I mean, if you want to break down that first project you did downtown, that would be really cool. But the specifics of the numbers, the build time, issues you ran into, and what the actual outcome was.
Okay, so I'm not going to do that one.
Okay, let's do a different one.
I'm going to do my 20 loft mixed-use building where we decided to be the GC on the deal.
Yeah.
All right.
And I didn't prepare all the numbers in advance, but I have them well enough
ballpark
to know
totally
that we can talk through it. Okay, so this was 2 properties for sale side by side. One was just land, and one had a little house on it, and the house faced the railroad track, and the city had abandoned the street in front of it. So it literally just faced a railroad track.
Awesome.
And so they really didn't want it to be a house anymore. And it was the zoning, like you mentioned. Ours is just called downtown zoning. 0 setbacks, 0 landscaping requirements, 0 parking requirements. But it was, I don't know, maybe the property line is maybe 30 foot from the railroad track. So everything in downtown Bryan is, but every time we build a new project, like, my kids are like, mom, you know, they're not going to let you build on the railroad track, right? Like, we just keep getting closer and closer. And so on that property, the lady, we was a realtor that owned just the raw land. And then that house came up for sale by her. And since we're connected in the realtor world very well here, my mom reached out to her as our realtor and said, look, we want both or none.
Yeah.
Because then we could put them together and do something bigger.
Nice.
And so that's kind of how we negotiated that deal. And I think our cost in that land over there was probably around 180, maybe 200 with both of the lots together.
Okay.
It had a super cute little house on it. So we're like, we would renovate that house all day long. So let's get another lot and move it.
Nice.
And the city was a nightmare. It just
wasn't
going to make sense, because we have like a set slab foundation rules here. But as soon as you go pier and beam, they're super uncommon for new construction here. Now you have to get an engineer involved, which means they want a soils report. And so you're talking about 10 grand to put it back on the blocks that it's currently on.
Yeah.
And then you have to bring it all up to code once it moves. So we couldn't leave the cool wood windows in it. But we ended up finding a mover who wanted to move it into the county. So they came and moved it off. It was pretty cool. And so we didn't have to demo a cute house. That's the point of that story.
There you go. It's a win. It's a win.
And so then on the construction cost, it was going to be 3-story and we wanted to do lots of cool features like open rafters. Mm-hmm. So we did a study to find out what people downtown wanted. And it came back, they don't want laminate flooring. They don't want tumbler travertine.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
They want like butcher block countertops, wood or concrete floors, brick walls. But this is going to be new construction and all of those elements are more expensive.
Yeah.
And you know, the market is professionals, students, because again, we're a big student market. Yeah. They want, you know, volleyball courts and swimming pools and gyms. And the nice thing about developing in downtown, the downtown is the amenity.
They so you have
any of those. Yeah. You don't have any of those expenses. You don't have to. So that's nice. Like every square foot can be rentable space.
That's yeah.
And so our construction costs, we GC'd it ourselves to save money, which was dumb. We now know you don't GC to save money because you want to charge that fee regardless.
Yes. Yep.
And so I think our construction cost on that deal was about $110 a square foot. We could not do it again for $110.
I was going to say, that's incredible.
Yeah.
It would be more like $130 a square foot for us if we were to do that again. And we were able to get 20 residential lofts and then 3 commercial spaces. Wow. So just a couple of nuggets about that. We didn't want an elevator. And so you can avoid having an elevator as long as you have at least one residential loft on the ground floor, because that would be your ADA loft.
Okay.
So as long as you're within a certain size. So so we had actually did 4 lofts on the bottom, commercial in the front, and the rest lofts. Now ours was, we wanted lofts, even though it was price per square foot was less on the rent.
Yeah.
We didn't know if people would, like retail shops would rent it. Like we just didn't know. So we minimized that. Turns out we didn't even put them. I mean, they went so fast on the retail space, and then so did the loft. So 220, our construction cost was about $2 million. And then with our soft costs, we were in for about $2.5 million.
Okay.
We scheduled to have it leased up in 24 months. We were leased up within 12. So nice. That was good. Or maybe our rents are too low. Who knows? But we were happy. We were happy to lease it up fast. For our financing, we did 24 months interest only. So this is what was beautiful, is the first 12 months, we're cash flowing because we're leased up way ahead of schedule.
Yeah.
The next 12 months, we're fully occupied, but we don't have a mortgage payment. We just have the interest only, which was like half of the whole payment. And so we were able to put $175,000 in a reserve.
Oh, wow.
So now we're 2 years in. We have $175,000 reserve. We're fully leased. So now we're looking at, so how do we refinance it? We just paid our first amortizing loan. So our loan was structured where it was 24 months was interest only, and then it automatically rolled into an amortizing note.
Yep.
So that's, again, it reduces the risk since you don't ever know what's going to be if banks are still doing loans in 2 years.
Yeah.
It's usually not the best financing because the loan to value is a little lower than if it were already built.
Yep.
The amortization is usually a little shorter, but you know, nothing has to be done. And as long as you're running your numbers on being able to cover that mortgage, it's a backstop.
Yep.
And so our income on that is about $35,000, I think, is what we're making a month on gross income.
Okay.
And then it looks like with our new mortgage payment, we're going to net probably around $7,000 or $8,000 a month.
Dang.
So, you know, our cost should stay low because it's new construction.
Yeah. Yep.
And that's without the refinance. So now we're at the point of, so what do? Do we refinance it and do non-recourse where we're no longer guarantees and get it off our balance sheet? They'll do a 30-year mortgage. So our loan to value may come down, but our payment is lower and we'll still be able to get a little bit of cash out. Or we can go conventional loan and do 85% loan to value and probably a 25-year amortization.
Yeah.
And get all of our cash out. So that's what we're now trying to weigh, but that has a personal guarantee, which clogs up our balance sheet when we go to get the next loan.
Yep.
We typically are the guarantees, our investors are no guarantee. So we're trying to figure out, I'm learning from you guys and everyone else, like what's the best way to long-term figure out how to structure these deals. But it's worked great for us. So we bought property and we're going to try and do 3 more.
Awesome. So you're going to try and do 3 more of those style bills or something different?
So we have of the three, two of them will be just like that because they have frontage on a major road. And then the third one is congruent next to the other one, but it doesn't have a major frontage. So that one, we're just going to do three-story of apartments.
Okay. Nice. That's really cool. I like the mixed-use concept because you get it gives you a little bit of protection in both areas. And it's just, it seems fun. Like, it seems really
fun
to roll through downtown and be like, those are mine.
I know. We got a big neon sign on it.
Yeah.
It probably doesn't make any sense. Neon's expensive and the maintenance is high, but boy, it's beautiful.
but you got to love what you do. And you got to have that balance.
Like, Katie's projects are absolutely
they're really cool.
Gorgeous. Like, I remember, like, we saw one, the 10-unit townhomes you had done. I think even maybe right around the time that we all went to the Maui Mastermind. And I was like, oh my gosh, Jeff, do you see what she's building? And then when we had the opportunity to potentially partner on, I was like, we got to figure this out because I just think it'd be really the ego side of me was like, man, that would be cool to be a part of that.
I remember you showed us like the second set. You're like, these ones aren't as cool. Not that proud of these ones. And Noah and I were like, those are so dope.
That's the project I'm talking about. Those are the pictures that you're looking at. That's the one we're breaking down. And you're like, oh, those are beautiful. I was like, those aren't the ones for sale.
Yeah. Yeah. Because those ones have like open wood.
Yeah, those
wood
are cool.
Trusses.
And like the concrete floors.
Hey, good, Katie, way to save him because he wasn't going to know what trusses are.
I was not going to say trusses.
That's not Noah's bill. He was going to say, he was going to be like, they had the really cool wood floor joists above you. They were awesome.
I was going to say,
I say it wrong all the time, and I'm in the business, but I'm a chick, so I can get away with it.
There you go. Awesome. Well, hey, Katie, we're running out of time. We appreciate you coming on. What are some books or podcasts that you would recommend for our listeners to check out that had a big impact for you and your business?
Okay, so let me tell you about books that are about development we do. Two of them are Strong Towns, Bottom-Up Revolution by Chuck Marone. It talks about development patterns and having strong downtowns.
Nice.
And the other one is called Walkable Cities, and it talks about like what elements need to be in place for your real estate to be successful. So on the book side, that. On the podcast, oh man, I hope I can remember the name of it, because there's this podcast out there that I just love. And it's these two super smart guys that aren't into real estate, although they talk about it sometimes, but they just literally sit there and brainstorm business ideas. And they're like, this could work and this could happen. And it has a really stupid name. It's called like How I Made My First Million.
But okay.
It doesn't have anything to do with about how they made their first million. Nice. I don't know how they came up with that name, but it is like, it just, every time I leave there, I just have all these ideas that I apply, like, oh, we could do that better. And it's like, it just gets mind going. So
that's really cool. Those are super specific.
I was going to say, those are the most niche down books that we've gotten. I just want to applaud you on that. That's so cool. Most people are like, oh, well, it doesn't matter if I'm a wholesaler, or a flipper, or a developer. What books? Rich Dad, Poor Dad, or just these vague, and not to like throw anybody
in
the bus.
Important, right?
But it's like these very generic real estate books. Like you have found books that are specific to what you're passionate about and what you're doing. And I'm sure that's having a big impact for business. So just kudos on that. That's really awesome.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Y'all just are blowing sunshine up my skirt.
You're so cool, Katie. We just want to be like Katie.
Yeah, I feel like this podcast is going to do really well just because of your personality, your clear, concise points. You have this path of progression throughout the show that like tracks your actual path of progression through your investment career. Like, this is a great episode.
I'm thinking about dropping this mic, but Travis will yell at me over there if I do it, so I'm not going.
Hey, look, I got another hour if y'all want to keep telling me how great I am. I don't
have to go anywhere. I love it.
Well, Katie, how can our listeners get a hold of you? Because I have a feeling that there's going to be people that are very interested in what you're doing.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that. So I am trying to, you know, make it kind of a younger vibe and go on the old Instagram. So I'm trying to grow my Instagram following. If you follow me on Instagram first and then DM me, I will respond.
There we go. You guys heard it from Katie herself. If you don't follow her and you try to send her a DM, you're not getting a response.
Yeah, because it goes to the weird box.
Yeah.
Yeah, the weird box. But I do want to help people or connect with people. I love people trying to take their next step. I'm probably not very good at people trying to take their first step because you just got to go do that. Yeah. Nobody can talk you into it.
Yep.
But once you've taken your first step, I love helping people grow to the next one.
That's awesome. Perfect.
Katie, thank you so much for coming on the show. This is really fun. This is a blast.
Had a great time. Thanks, guys.
All right, guys. Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of the Chasing Freedom Podcast with Noah and Jeff.
Please subscribe to our YouTube channel in the show notes below. And if you ever want to get a hold of us, feel free to do it via our Instagrams. You can also follow us for our funny content on TikTok.